VolitionRx, a multinational epigenetics company revolutionizing cancer diagnosis with the development of simple, easy-to-use, cost-effective blood tests involving a range of cancers and other diseases. Volition's clinical trials in human health have shown promising results in detecting several cancer types, including colorectal, lung, and a variety of bloodborne cancers. VolitionRx. Web address, volition.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. I welcome Ambassador John Bolton, former National Security Advisor, former Ambassador to the United Nations for the United States, to comment on a recent article he publishes about Afghanistan, the president's decision to depart Afghanistan in some large fashion military departure September 11th of this year, and what has been achieved and what will remain behind once the U.S. and its NATO allies, we can believe, exit Afghanistan. John, if I correctly identify the problem we have is, where is Al-Qaeda? Because the reporting these last years suggests that Al-Qaeda never really exited Afghanistan. It's been contained by repeated actions of NATO and the U.S. Will that remain Al-Qaeda containment once we depart in some fashion? Good evening to you, John.
Good evening. No, I think, unfortunately, the Biden decision, one might really call it the Trump-Biden decision to pull all of our military forces out of Afghanistan is very ill-advised, and I'm worried about the tragic consequences. Certainly, they'll be tragic in Afghanistan. What I'm really worried about is the tragic consequences for the United States and the West as a whole. The exact status of ISIS forces in the country is not well known, although they are certainly there. Some, I think, never left. More have come back as they've been driven out of other places. I think between ISIS and Al-Qaeda, you've already got a pretty substantial base of non-Taliban terrorists in the country or waiting to come back in. And I don't know any serious observer who really knows Afghanistan who doesn't think that the issue of the Taliban taking back over most of the country, certainly the capital and their former heartland and Helmand and other related provinces, is nearly certain. It's just a question of when, and with that will likely bring back their past policies and practices on particularly the women of Afghanistan and their perfect willingness to allow the country to be used as a sanctuary for terrorist groups. Now, Biden seems comfortable with this. When the intelligence chiefs, the key intelligence officials, testified before Congress recently, they were unambiguous. We were going to lose intelligence capability if this happened. Our military officials have testified that they see the fall of the country to Taliban as inevitable, and that we cannot replicate the capabilities we, the United States, now have in country in some relatively nearby location and anything like the level of efficacy we now have. So it's very depressing, and it's a sad commentary on the lack of leadership we've had at the political level in this country, that they cannot explain to the American people that this deployment has been not for purposes of making Afghanistan the Switzerland of Central Asia, but for defending the United States in a forward way against the terrorist threat. And I'm deeply afraid that it's a matter of time before the terrorists reestablish themselves and we again have to worry about an attack on the United States.
John, what we have here is the puzzle from our youth, Vietnam puzzle. I'm told, it's an anecdote, but I'm told that the discussion in the Biden administration included questions, doubts, fears of a Saigon 1975, of a collapse of the government and a seeking of shelter by the people there who worked for the U.S. all these years. I'm told that discussion happened. But even if it didn't, John, That's a real a possibility for the world cameras to show the U.S. and its limits. That would suit our adversaries to show our weakness.
It would indeed. And look, we've given them the outer deadline by which all American military forces will be withdrawn. As you said right at the beginning, it's also very clear all NATO, all other NATO military forces will withdraw. So if I were an Afghan who had worked with the U.S. government or worked with non-governmental organizations but closely related to the U.S., I'd be trying to figure out a way to get out of the country. And I think, frankly, an awful lot of educated people, men and women, are going to say, we don't have a future in a Taliban-controlled Afghanistan. They're going to want to leave. And, you know, the government may collapse before September the 11th. The Taliban may come in before then. It's just it's very hard for me to see potential good news in the way this is going to unfold. And, you know, we're supposed to be concerned. Even the Biden administration says we should be concerned about the threat posed by China. Well, what does it say when we withdraw entirely from a country right on China's periphery, right next to Pakistan, which is itself constantly at risk of further terrorist control of that government, and next door on the west to Iran, which has the leading role as the preeminent state sponsor of terrorism around the world? This was not a deployment limited in its implications to Afghanistan, but to Pakistan and Iran as well. And we've thrown that away, too.
John, is the United States leaving Eurasia? The larger picture, are we pulling back? Are we going through one of those phases of isolationism? It has other names, you know, take care of home. Our focus is on home. But is that the period we're moving into?
Well, it could well be. I mean, it's we don't know what other American deployments will be affected in the rest of the broader Middle East. But we do see the Biden administration hell-bent to get back into the Obama administration's Iran nuclear deal, as if the deal was going to constrain Iran's nuclear ambitions or its widespread support for international terrorism or its conventional military activities across Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. The idea that empowering Iran, which is what getting back into that deal would do, will make the world safer. It's a logic that I simply don't follow.
You have published another piece about a controversial and sticky situation in the world, the South Caucasus. The conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan settled so far with Russian peacekeepers, which is deeply ironic given Russia's part in this conflict, supporting Armenia. But you've published, John, that it is a good thing that the Biden administration is ready to get involved in the region, making this statement about genocide, which in some way confronts Mr. Erdogan of Turkey with his bellicosity. But there seems to be a hesitation, John, in your piece saying, is this all, if this is all we're going to do, it's not helpful. What is best for the U.S. in the South Caucasus, given the ancient rivalries?
Well, it is very complex, and I don't mean to understate any of the difficulties involved, but we've got three countries there stretched from across the Caucasus Mountains, Azerbaijan, Armenia, and Georgia. I think they are in a very, very bad neighborhood, as you say, surrounded by Russia, Turkey, and Iran. And under its present regime, Turkey is hardly a friend of the United States. And yet these countries do have considerable importance for the United States. Armenia has a large diaspora in the United States. Georgia has struggled to be a free country, part of its territory now under Russian control. And Azerbaijan has very difficult times squeezing between Russia and Iran, but has access to the oil and gas reserves of the Caspian Sea. So I think U.S. interest ought to be to promote the sovereignty and autonomy of these three small countries and until the bigger countries get themselves straightened out. And I think this is a strategically critical area for the United States in any event, which we have sadly neglected far too long.
You visited Baku, if I remember, John, in your first year as National Security Advisor. Baku is the prosperous capital of Azerbaijan. That oil and gas flows to Western Europe. Is there a case that to be made to the Biden administration that that's critical to the security of our allies in Europe? Would that move the story for Mr. Biden beyond his remarks about events of 100 years ago?
Well, it's a true story, and it should. I also visited Yerevan and Tbilisi on that trip to get to all three countries. If some of these problems could be minimized, hopefully put on the road the solution, I think that corridor for oil and gas from the Caspian and from the other countries of Central Asia on the eastern shore of the Caspian, which are also producers and want to be able to get their oil and gas out without going through Russia and without going through Iran. This is the pathway. So it has potentially enormous economic stakes for the U.S. and for Europe as well.
John Bolton, former ambassador to the United Nations for the United States, former national security advisor. I only call John Bolton when the going gets tough, and Afghanistan and Nagorno-Karabakh are tough going. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network.